Good afternoon from Harshaw House. It is Saturday, 24th of January. Can you believe it? Beautiful, bright, clear, sunny day, 9 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and I am told big storm coming. So at least you'll have your reading before that big storm comes, unless, of course, you don't have electricity. And then in which case you will have to receive this message telepathically, because I do additionally simulcast it out to the eighth dimension of the astral plane for those who are tuned in to that, and you don't even need to have any kind of a device to play it on. You just get the information directly through osmosis. Anyway, Eric here with your Scorpio Inner Peace reading. This is the reading that corresponds with the Inner Light written readings. Those amazingly done 2 weeks ago. It did seem to go on forever. 12 is a lot. 12 of anything is a lot. You ever notice you have a dozen eggs and you just can't ever use them? You just keep making omelets, and it's like that dozen eggs just never runs out. That's how it felt doing the written readings. Only the difference being that I would have to actually crawl into the egg and become the chicken, and then fully mature into a hatchling, and then peck through the shell, and then that's when you would get your reading. So I'm here with a second take on your chart, a different point of view. I haven't even reviewed the things that I wrote. I prefer not to. I guess I could do that, but I find it doesn't. I don't look back usually, but I'm seeing things that are, I think I haven't mentioned some of them, and one of them, maybe I did, I don't know, but it's going to be different. Everyone who knows you, and you know that Scorpio is a very, very relationship-oriented sign. There's different reasons for that. There's different ways to describe that and say, oh, how that might be, what's driving that, but it's a fact that Scorpio is very relationally driven. And we look for the most, let's say, ordinary day-to-day activities of our relationships and relationship expectations in this place called the seventh house, right across the dial. It's a little up and to the right slightly. You can see in the chart that's accompanying this reading that you can see the relationship between houses one and seven. And so seven, seventh place, just tells you what's going on in the kind of the walk around pedestrian world of existence and also your partnerships. You know, the seventh has an ordinary quality to it. I think this has not been said. I don't know if anyone said this. Some of the houses have really extraordinary properties. 12 is one of them. This deep, mysterious, inward, inner abyss. Can talk about that. But seven is like what, you know, you're walking down the street, you run into somebody, and you have Taurus on the seventh. So that's your sign or rising sign is part of the Taurus-Scorpio axis. Taurus and Scorpio contain one another. They're both feminine signs on the fixed cross. One ruled by Venus, one ruled by Mars. Scorpio ruled by Mars, obviously, and Taurus ruled by Venus. But what this says is that you need and depend upon your relationships to have a steady quality. You're not into the, you know, get married six times. I mean, maybe you were, but it's not your preference. It's not what you envisioned for yourself in terms of relationships. It's not what your constitution is oriented on. You want something solid. And the challenge has been that for the past 7 years, Uranus, this planet that is about instability, sudden change, disruption. The only constant is change with Uranus. That's really what's going on. And it's highly unpredictable and not known for its, let's say, ethical structure, its ethical foundation. Challenging all of your ideas and experiences and needs about steadfast, high quality, dependable relationships. Now, we are in a world where the expectations are ridiculous and where everything has been turned transactional. But to have Uranus going through this seventh place, which, remember, is described by Taurus. Taurians are the people who never move. You know, they get a place, you know, when they're, you know, they save up and they buy a house when they're like 23, and then they live in it till they're 73. I'm kidding, but only a little. Except for one thing, that with Uranus going through there, that kind of shocks and shakes and destabilizes for you what you know want to be a very grounded situation. And this has meant in practical terms that it's not been easy to have the kind of stability that you want. There have been all kinds of unexpected surprises. There has been people that showed up that were maybe a little bit strange, situations not turning out as planned. If you've been in a good, solid relationship through all this time, well, that's because good, solid relationships can survive this kind of transit and also use it to expand their possibilities. And maybe, you know, if people who've been together for a while do need change, and if that's the case, you've had your change. But then the relationships that are not built on solid foundations of values and grounded in something real and where there really is physical compatibility. I mean, like, if you don't have physical compatibility with somebody, forget it. You've got to like how they look, how they feel, how they touch you. Are they simpatico with you? You know, all of that hormonal level, aesthetic level stuff that's, you know, cast off as superficial. No, for you need all of that. And there has to be sexual compatibility. And God only knows what's been going on with Uranus going through here since 2018. So Uranus and Chiron change signs at the same time. Uranus enters Taurus, Chiron enters Aries, going on at the same time. Now Uranus is making its exit from Taurus. So that is suggesting that it is a kind of an end of an era in your relationships where there, and this era has been about some kind of disruptive force coming through that you do not understand. Now, this has taught you a lot of things. However it managed to work out for you, these transits are always expanding and informative, even if they can be inconvenient. And at the beginning of this, I wondered, like, oh, how is Scorpio going to handle this? Like, this is, and Taurus, you know, Taurians are, you can make jokes about Taurians that are like, well, why do you need a new radio when your old radio works just fine? Like, nobody listens to the radio except for Taurus. And they still have the one that warms up and it has tubes, you know, and it takes a minute to get the station, and you tune in and you still get Howard K. Smith doing his reports. I wondered how it's going to work out for Taurians also, because this is just a little too much change too fast. This is the world we live in, too much change too fast. So this is going to shift. This is already shifting. It is easing off. And the discussion now goes to what kind of an interesting agreement can we have, and you must be flexible about your agreements. Actually, it's quite likely that when your jealous gene is not going, that you are quite flexible about your agreements, and the agreements have to work for both people. This is the thing about agreements. So there can be no, you know, throwing down in any kind of a relationship agreement. And but let's come back to that in a second. So the two things regarding the relationship angle that shift in 2026 and have started, but really this the best is yet to come, is that Uranus leaves Taurus in the Northern Hemisphere spring. And as it leaves Taurus, Chiron begins to make its way in. So Chiron's completing its transition into Gemini this year. Sorry, Uranus is completing its transition into Gemini, which starts to describe the commitment theme, the adaptable contract theme, and Chiron makes its way in to Taurus. These are two very big and, I think, very positive changes. Because the way time is passing, it moves the discussion of potential differences and needs to adapt into the house associated with the agreements of relationships, not merely the expectations and the projections of relationships. And then second, you're replacing this chaotic influence of Uranus with a very stabilizing, focusing presence of Chiron. And Chiron adds a dimension that Uranus just really is not capable of. Chiron adds the dimension of healing. Chiron adds the dimension of a wider mutual purpose. And so here, with Chiron going through Taurus, which is going to take a year to work its way in, it's something like May. Let's get the exact dates here, since they may be pertinent. Uranus dipped into Gemini early in 2025, and Chiron's going to dip into Taurus in 2026. So let's see. I've got to get events, positions, and we're looking for Chiron in Taurus. And by the way, if you're super duper 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 older than even I am, Chiron last entered Taurus in 1976 and 77, around the time of the discovery of Chiron. And now Chiron's going to enter Taurus on June 19th. And retrograde out in the fall, and then make a second ingress on April 14th. So it's June of this year, and then 9 months later-ish, April of 2027. And this is a very substantial change in the quality and tone of your relationships and what you draw out of your partners and what people that you attract. Because with Uranus, you're likely to attract the disruptive, eccentric, maybe a little wacky types, whereas with Chiron, you're more likely to draw the mentor, the teacher, the wise elder, the person coming to you in need of some form of your wise counsel. Chiron can represent the client, the patient, the mentee. Usually it represents the teacher, the mentor, the healer, the whatever it might be, the facilitator, something like this. But it also leaves open a way of entry into your chart for those who need your support. Keep that in mind. And it's good that this is a phase in. It takes time to get used to this. But I think one of the first things you're likely to notice and possibly be noticing is that things settle down a bit. And you might wonder how everything that happened. And Even though sometimes your partners can be a little bit taciturn, you know, reserved and quiet, you know, do a debriefing, you know, do a review of what happened. And I suggest, you know, that also in my journalism, I'm into chronologies, but I think in personal growth and healing work, chronologies are very important as well. And maybe make a chronology that goes back to the beginning of 2018, say, for example, and comes to the present, and particularly a chronology associated with your personal relationships. And and as I said, there's, you know, there's things that have changed, and then there's the, you know, the only constant is change. That's a kind of Uranus concept. And then the more things change, the more they stay the same. That's a Taurus concept, because remember, you're part Taurus, and you bring that in through other people. And all of that agitation and the things that someone or people were going through. I mean, this is important to realize that you have had. See, the thing about what I will call Taurus types, and they might not literally be Taurus, but I've seen a lot of Taurus Scorpio action, and I've seen a lot of Scorpio Pisces action in my career, that people have things they have to go through, and you tend to attract the partners who are more stable and who therefore can often wait a long time to catch up on their changes, and then they go through their changes all at once very quickly, and that's the presence of Uranus. So what Chiron does is it's going to slow down the movie. And it is going to provide something that, again, Uranus cannot provide, which is a hook into the physical. It's very important that you have a hook into the physical. And that will come with its own agenda. There will be a healing agenda associated with that. One other thing to notice about your seventh, as I have indicated, that it's written out Albion. I'm just going to add, I'll do a new scan of this chart. QB1, 1992, QB1. I was the first kid on the block writing about 1992 QB1, because I was very fortunate to be given an ephemeris in 1998, just a few years after it was discovered, and this thing's become known as Albion. And it is in your seventh place. It's in Taurus, it's in mid-Taurus. And what I think Albion represents to you is the idea that there is an ideal person. And Albion does not seem to lend itself to idealization, which is possible, but rather the idea that There's somebody right for you. There's somebody right for you. Now, one of the things that all of this movement and vibration in your relationships has done is made you more emotionally self-sufficient. To have the Taurus-Scorpio axis highlighted as much as you have it, that can imply counting on others heavily for your sense of counterbalance and stability in the world. And I suspect there have been benefits for you in that regard. Now, before we go to the break, let's take a few minutes and consider Uranus, which has been this disruptive influence, moving on into Gemini. And it's moving into Gemini concurrently with a much, 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 much slower point called Sedna, like much slower. Uranus's orbit is only 84 years. Sedna's is 11,400 years, roundabout. And so Sedna represents a much slower process of change, and Sedna represents your ability to read the background energy, to kind of read the room, but the room is the entire mental environment. And this is very, very important, that you be able to get a read on the nature of the world as it is influencing the nature of your relationships. I know people think that they live in this completely isolated and private world, but it really is not true. And when the culture is going through something, that something very often impacts relationships. And the culture is going to go through a lot under Uranus and Gemini. And so it will be very helpful if you understand that your encounters with other human beings and the agreements you have with other human beings are closely related to and influenced by everything going on around them. And that everything is, by that I mean everything going on in the mental environment. And that you form your agreements realistically, that your expectations be grounded, and that you only reasonably expect what is committed to, where there is a verbal spoken understanding, and that you be open to interesting arrangements that will work for everyone, but that are highly unusual arrangements. And always, when we're talking about matters of the seventh and the eighth places, which is where others tend to come into our lives, that your inner cohesion, your sense of your being and your belonging as independent from others as you can think of yourself is extraordinarily important, that you be solid in who you are. And then relationships are a whole other thing. So I started today by looking at a part of what's called the zone of projection, the opposite side of the chart from where Scorpio is. We looked at Taurus and Gemini. There's another couple of houses in there. We'll come back to them. The fifth and the sixth, the houses of creativity and of work. Lots of important stuff going on in there. But I want to describe the two adjacent houses to Scorpio. And I think I wrote about this in the Scorpio reading, because I remember somebody writing back to me about it, or maybe it was in the video that I did when I did Scorpio. That was one of the first written ones that I did. But the concept was that Scorpio has all these associations. It's associated with passion and jealousy and control and intensity and all of this, and it's. Scorpio is a quality that is very much grounded in the human animal experience, because it's so closely associated with matters of reproduction and species survival and individual survival and all of those things that you can read about in Popular Mechanics magazine. But the thing with Scorpio is that despite this hormonal orientation, this intensity, and this like drive to connect, that's so Scorpionic, and that makes Scorpios really great to connect with if you like passion and concentrated sexuality and a strong cup of coffee emotionally, right? This is, people who like Scorpios are they're not going to be tea drinkers usually. But the other thing about Scorpio is I have a theory that you may take as a compliment. I hope you do. That the reason people are nervous about astrology is because of Scorpio. They're like, well, this whole astrology thing would work just fine for me if we could only get rid of Scorpio and all the things that it represents. It's like, oh, we don't, I don't really want to talk about that. But here's the thing. The house, the second house, that one right after you, very strongly describes you. It's just for any one of the signs. You want to describe something about Capricorn, not really known widely. Look at Aquarius. So, and this game will work with pretty much all the signs. So let's do that with Scorpio, and when we do that, we see that the sign right after Scorpio, also called the second place, is Sagittarius, and this is exactly the opposite of the intensity, the bonding, the drive for materialism and success, and all of that that's connected with Scorpio. It's the second house. Sagittarius is an utterly cosmic concept of existence. And the second describes your values and attitudes. And your values and attitudes are very strongly influenced by Sagittarius. And Sagittarius, of its own, cares as much about all those things supposedly attributed to Scorpio as, you know, a distant galaxy might care. In fact, it is the sign of our galaxy and then a focal point with 100,000 other galaxies that are flowing into it in Sagittarius. So it's almost as if you have two whole different concepts of existence. You know, nobody loves a $1,000 pair of boots like a Scorpio, but at the same time, then you can go right into the second place, this place of self-esteem and of money and of your personal resources, and you know that's all complete bullshit, because the ultimate reality of human beings is this cosmic reality of which we're sitting right in the middle of it. You know, it's funny. I've had a lot of conversations with so-called flat earthers, and they say, well, if we're really moving through space at, you know, 80 kilometers a second, and the Earth is really, you know, going around the sun this fast, and the sun is really going around the galaxy this fast, and, you know, and they probably wouldn't know this, would bring drawn toward the great attractor at a million miles an hour and all that, why doesn't it feel like it then? And what I say to that is, it does feel like it. This is how it feels. And so you know that you live in this very, compared to normal waking consciousness, this very unusual existence. And you know that all of the worldly baloney is just dust in the wind. And this creates tension within you. About like what's really true for you. And you can have a very large, wide perspective, and then you can have almost humorously limited perspective. Like, for example, if you wind up having your jealousy triggered, that's not that much fun. So how you work with this apparent contradiction is very important, and there's another one also. If you go above Scorpio, you'll see you have Libra adjacent to Scorpio, and Libra is what's called your 12th place. That's the place where everything is hidden. That's the place where things get lost. You can't count them. In the second house, you can count them up. You can stack all your silver coins up and you can see how many you've got. In the 12th place, you don't even know how many silver coins have disappeared, or how, you know, people have disappeared and whole relationships have disappeared. And the 12th, though, has a way, the values and attitudes of the 12th have a way of being this concealed engine of consciousness that is running the show. And what you've got in the 12th in Libra is this point that's a massive galaxy called M87. Now, I don't read a lot of these galactic points. I really only read three. I read two in Sagittarius and one in Libra. I do not want to get carried away, but I do think that it's important to have reference points that are outside of our solar system. Since I don't use a lot of fixed stars, I will if needed, but I don't use a lot of fixed stars. These are the fixed points that I use. Two deep space points in Sag, and then a galaxy that's fairly nearby. It's so big that it bends everything around it. It's more powerful than our own galactic center, and it's quite close to us compared to something like the Great Attractor. And with this galaxy, M87, which is more than four times the size of the Milky Way, has all kinds of bizarre features, can represent a sense of something missing. Now, the Buddhists have their hungry ghost theory. The hungry ghost theory is like humans are all these kind of phantoms that are incarnated in physical form and hungry for something, but they don't know what it is. And it has a way of keeping the ego chasing whatever the next thing is. And that is going on behind the scenes. It's going on in some, you know, back attic room in your mind, in your subconscious, or somewhere in your genetic lineage. And it is, I think, evocative of and descriptive of what drives you on a deep level. And not only what drives you on a deep level, but what is, that and a motive that you don't have name for. You don't have a word for this motive. You don't, because it doesn't manifest consciously. It's so deep in and is a feeling that is so normal to you that it's what I call environmental. You don't notice it any more than you notice the air anything else going on, all the background noises going on in the environment, and the background smells going on in the environment. This is a lot more potent and a lot more powerful. And it is not a rational force. That's the important thing. And also located in this deep and concealed, mysterious, cryptic aspect of yourself, there is also a motivational drive for things to make sense. And this, I think this describes Scorpio quite well, in the sense that it is that the inherent struggle of Scorpio is very pronounced between the irrational in the 12th and the rational in the 1st. They'd be like, I want it, therefore that's the right thing. That's, you know, that's Mars and Scorpio. That's Mars and Scorpio talking. But the I want something, but I don't know what I want, that's M87 in Libra in the 12th talking. And Logos, this all must make perfect sense, but it doesn't. But I'm going to keep thinking it's going to make perfect sense. That is some interesting tension. And one of the things I suspect M87 can do is that it can work like a kind of a permanent... It's a sense of something missing, and that sense of something missing does not necessarily depart you when the thing that you thought was missing is no longer missing. Huh? You following me here? That if there was some benefit that you associated with having a really great partner, and that you felt driven to find that person, you might find that person and then still have the sense of drive and the sense of need. The need and the fulfillment do not necessarily connect where M87 is concerned. It just seems so big. And the question is, with M87, I am inclined to want to reverse the story and have it not be this sense of the hungry ghost, but rather a sense of something that you want to offer that you have in abundance that you don't know where to offer it. And you want to feel received. And this is one of the trickier human emotions, but animals also have this, especially the anthropomorphized animals such as dogs and cats, and anything that bonds with a human develops a need to be appreciated and to be appreciated. All of the critters we keep with us have a need that's, I think, more basically stated with usually less conflict, that they want to be accepted for what they bring and feel gratitude. For example, I mean, if you have critters, make sure they know how much you value their presence. And even cats tend to be very protective of the family home, and make sure that they feel your gratitude. And at the same time, what I would suggest, the way that you handle this M87 thing in Libra, is that you surround yourself, or at least get a couple of people who are openly grateful for your presence and what you have to offer. You cannot flog it out of them, but look for the ones who are naturally appreciative. Notice who in your life is already naturally appreciative, and reward them for being so. Because this energy is so hot that it can turn on itself and backfire, and constantly performs the trick of making it seem like there's not enough when there is plenty. Okay, so that's a little bit about the connection of Libra next to Scorpio in one direction and Sagittarius in the other direction. And this, by the way, places you in a world of very large, deep mysteries. You know, Scorpio, in a way, is so ordinary. It's biological, which means that it's physical. It's oriented on all the necessary transactions within the biological realm to make sure that life keeps happening and all of that. But then when we go to the other two signs that modify Scorpio, we find out that there's deep space points in both of them, and that they have very little to do with the actual events on the Earth. And so it's as if you kind of sort of live in two different realities. So if that's the case, then you're kind of a world walker, which is my term for those who have one foot between each world. You're walking with, this is one of the reasons why this is, people would think astrology was just fine if not for Scorpio, is that you do have you're in tune with the other side. You know, you may not be making phone calls every day or have a TV show where you're channeling dead people, but you definitely are a world walker in many different ways. And don't let that seem too spooky. It's not. It's a very normal thing about existence on this plane of reality. We live in a convergence point, and it's possible to, you know, flip the lights off and hide in your room and pretend that where we live is not a convergence point for many different dimensions of existence and many different qualities of consciousness intersecting right where you are. But it would be very helpful if you were open to it. You would learn a lot about yourself and the world. And this is a form of being spiritually open. And for you, the nice thing about being spiritually open is that it's not an abstraction. You know, you don't need spirituality to come out of a book. I always think it's interesting how people treat, for example, dogs. You know, what they think a dog is, how they think a dog thinks. I mean, I once heard Ron Kurtz, the founder of Focomi Therapy, make some absurd statement about what dogs don't notice. It means as good as Ron Kurtz was at Focomi Therapy, which is based on Gestalt Therapy, he kind of got an F in Gestalt Therapy because in Gestalt training, you are trained to not deny consciousness, to not say, well, my crystal on the shelf can't hear me. You don't have to believe in crystals, but you don't know if that crystal can hear you. You don't, right? And so for you, spirituality, in a sense, needs to go no further than a dog laying in your lap who just loves you, and you realize, oh, okay, it kind of does, the whole spiritual trip really actually does come down to this affectionate bond that I feel with another living creature. And it would be very nice to have this in human form. And the thing is that, you know, humans are much more egoically complex. Without saying what dogs know and don't know, most of them have much more transparent ego structures. They're much closer to their immediate sense of who they are. They can disagree and then get over it in a second. And when they love you, they love you. And, you know, humans really need to learn from them. By the way, the spiritual piece associated with the cozy, homey quality is the sign Cancer on the ninth place. And so the ninth describes your spiritual style. And the ninth describes your, that's another way of saying that it describes your relationship to a cosmos much larger than you are. But Cancer is all about being close to home and close to the brood and a feeling of being emotionally grounded. And so, and this is, you know, fabulous news, I think, but for Scorpio, the spirituality is emotional grounding. Right? It's not about enlightenment. Maybe there's going to be some, you know, there's always the guy that's trying to get enlightened by injecting vitamin C, but by the, you know, kilogram. But for you, your spiritual path manifests in the form of simply feeling good. Now, that would be that would be an improvement over many concepts of the spiritual path, and you're capable of the greatest learning in that state. And then the ninth also addresses matters of travel. And by the way, Jupiter is going to be spending another 5 months in Cancer. What Cancer on the ninth place says is that you can be at home anywhere. This is a marvelous and uncanny ability that you have to simply show up somewhere, and then your motel room or hotel room or Airbnb or cabana or whatever is suddenly transformed into the place you actually live, and that place can be anywhere in the world at any time in the world. And that's especially true with Jupiter there. By the way, spring is going to be a fantastic time to travel. I would say between March 10th and June 30th, preferably before some kind of tourist season heats up, but fantastic time to travel with Jupiter moving direct through your ninth place. And where it goes after that, I'm going to talk about after Interstellar gives us another couple of minutes of yellow noise. So your solar chart this year has a kind of a rising star quality to it. The rising star quality is illustrated a couple of different ways, but the obvious thing is that, you know, all summer long we're going to be seeing Jupiter in the night sky, and that's going to be Jupiter moving through your ninth house of higher everything, higher self, higher love, higher law, higher education, and long distance international travel. And then when it's done with that on June 30th, it's going to go into Leo, which is your 10th place. And that is the your star is rising concept in astrology. There's a number of ways to see that, but certainly Jupiter going into Leo in the 10th is evocative of a concept of being noticed, and it's a concept of success, and it is a bright star that is going to be shining. And this is an effect of the second half of the year, and there is a lot of energy that's going to ground into. Jupiter is going to ground right into Pluto in your fourth place, and you know, you need, when you've got a transit like, for example, Jupiter in the 10th, you really want to have something in the 4th to ground it. And for you, that's going to be Pluto. That's been working its way in over the past 3 years or so. And I've talked a lot about it. Maybe we'll come back to it. I'm pretty sure I go into some detail in the inner light readings. But what I want to hint at here is that, first of all, there's a connection between your view of the world and then whatever this next stage of your growth and success is. And the view of the world is, you know, what I'm suggesting here is, I know not everyone can do this, and it's not always convenient, and traveling is a big pain in the butt right now. But get somewhere that shifts your viewpoint. It can be very helpful to just get a new perspective. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, one of the things I like to do is just, load up my Subaru with camera gear and a guitar and just go driving around New York State. I happen to live in New York State. It's a pretty cool state. We've got a little bit of everything here. And I knew that I wanted to move out of Kingston last year. I knew I had to get out of that place and out of the apartment I'd been in for a long time, the office, and none of it was working, and the price was going to go up radically and all this stuff. And so what I did was I went traveling, and I stayed out through a pair of eclipses. And I came right back, and everything started to move very well and very quickly. And so what I'm suggesting is, though there's not, you know, there are eclipses, they're hovering around, around Virgo Pisces area. But that shaking up your sense of place is going to be very, very helpful to you professionally. So you want to catch a ride on Jupiter as Jupiter moves from early-ish in Cancer, where the retrograde is going to end. Jupiter retrograde in Cancer is going to end. And then that's going to move into Leo, and you're going to pick up all kinds of very, very powerful energy that is pre-existing on this axis of home, career, home being fourth, home, family, fourth, career, visibility, 10th, in a almost invisible aspect, which is Zeus and Pluto in an opposition. And so Zeus and Pluto, thanks a lot. What does that really tell me? Well, what it tells me is that there's an energy circuit going through this axis of your chart already, which is about grounding and about visibility. It's about both. It's why famous people need a good home life. And it's often very hard for famous people to have a good home life. But if you're a very well-known person, you need your privacy. For example, that's a fourth, tenth thing. But what Jupiter is going to do is it's going to come along and pick up the energy of this Zeus-Pluto opposition like a condenser, and things could start moving very, very quickly. And you, and I'm suggesting that you take the time between now and then, between now and, say, for example, July 1st, and just stretch your boundaries. Just see a little bit more of the world. Get a feeling for being someplace besides where you are now. Get yourself into some motion and a little bit of an expanded world, and you're going to do fantastic on this Jupiter transit across your midheaven. It doesn't get better than Jupiter in Leo. Now, Jupiter in Cancer, that's pretty good too. But Jupiter in Leo on the very top of your chart is absolutely glorious. Now let's check out a house we haven't talked about is the 11th. And this is the social house. And you have Virgo here. Those people who are aware are keenly aware that even if your social life is going fantastic, you know, you've got all the friends you could ever possibly want, and, you know, everyone comes over Saturday night and you're making pancakes for the whole crowd every Sunday morning and all that stuff. The world is very stressed out socially right now, and this is everyone's at the end of the line on their phones and on their computers. And you know, we were so social for social media, and we were given isolation. And the isolation, this was a big deal even in the 1990s. There were articles about the isolation being created by digital consciousness, people not leaving their houses, people not being interested in other people, people losing their social skills, and this illusion that the digital environment created that you can just have everything that you need just at the tip, just at your fingertips on your, what was then your keyboard, and now what is for most people their phone. This has created a state of affairs in society that you are very sensitive to, and you may or may not wonder what caused all this, what this is about, and even how to describe it accurately. And I would say that you might notice compared to when you were quite young, that there is a narrowness that has taken over social existence, a scripted quality that has taken over social existence, a fear of going off script, limited concepts of what a person is, the sense that a person is not a holistic person, but rather that a person is a kind of a collection of the roles they play in life. Wow. So that's not that much fun. And you have a sense of people as being holistic beings, but it's very difficult to connect that right now because of this narrowness taking over. And that narrowness can be seen on this point called Trans-Pluto in Virgo, and Orcus in Virgo, and other factors in Virgo. And so what the 11th is, social environments that you're in that are self-selecting, that's an important part of the 11th, is self-selecting. Self-selecting groups that may feel slightly elitist, but the reality is that they're just self-selecting groups. And so it's not like the crowd at Yankee Stadium. It's you go to a party and it's like your friends are there and then a bunch of people that your friends know. That's an 11th house event. But with Virgo, there is a kind of a lack of breathing room describing this. And it would work fine if not for Trans-Pluto, but unfortunately or fortunately, Trans-Pluto is going to be there for like another 50 years. So it's just going to be a fact of this whole next stage of reality that we aren't all listening to. And what this suggests is that if you use the concept of specificity, which is a flip on the you know, this person is a cashier at Starbucks, so that's all they are. And they must always conduct themselves exactly like a cashier at Starbucks. Or this person is a cop, and they're a cop when they're on duty, and they're a cop when they're off duty, and they're a cop when they're in the shower, and you know, they bring their gun in the shower, and they're walkie-talkie, you know, they're all ready to go, and even when they're naked. That rather you turn that on its ear, and that the other side of that is that you seek out social situations that seem to be special interest. They're not going to necessarily stay that way, but it's a little bit of a hack. It's a little bit of like, well, where can I go? Like, what am I good at? Well, let's see. Well, my grandfather was a stamp collector, so I got to learn a lot about stamp collecting, and I've got a couple of stamps. I'm going to go to the Stamp Collectors Club meeting. And you poke around, and you see trade shows. This is another example of a highly purpose-specific 11th house meeting. Now, you would do well in trade shows, not as necessarily as a vendor or even a customer. I'm just saying as a place to cruise. Trade shows associated with health and wellness. If you're looking to make friends, you might not be looking to make friends. What I'm saying is, if you're looking to make friends, you know, check websites, check the Chamber of Commerce, check, look for things that are in, you know, somewhat in your area. And I say health and wellness because it's Virgo. That could include food. The whole food trip through Virgo gets a little bit boring, but because it's so so oriented on, you know, exactly eating exactly the right thing to attain immortality. But nonetheless, food could also work. That's, you know, food is more sensuous, but this is why I'm thinking health, wellness, nutrition, those kind of, where those kind of people are. Another, and think of what proper dairy, you know, dairy, that's a big thing about Virgo. Don't ask me why it should be Taurus, but according to Lily, if you're looking for a dairy farm, look in Virgo, and farming generally, growing food more so than preparing food. Again, this is for cruising for friends, to work the concept of being specific. Okay, that said, one last thing. Jupiter is going to go over the top of your chart. And this is, you always have Leo there. And so you probably do like being appreciated, being in the spotlight. I mean, who does not like a good round of applause? And to be recognized for who they are and what they do. But as much as Leo has an influence, the thing is that there's another magnetism working in your chart that has a way of pulling you out of the spotlight. And that element is where you have Aries in your chart. And that is the sixth place. So the fire signs for Scorpio are about the places where you deal with your work resources, what you have to offer, your tools of the trade. That's in Sagittarius, so that would cast you as kind of an intergalactic space pilot with your license. That would be a second house thing. And then Aries, the sixth, what you actually do every day. And this is so important because what you do every day is how you form who you are every day. So you're in a constant growth process. Your work, by which I do not mean your reputation, I do not mean your picture on the shopping cart in the supermarket. I once had a client tell me that they were famous. They must have felt famous because, you know, I'm very well known in my community. My face is on the real estate head, on the shopping carts, in the supermarket. One of the things you have to have as an astrologer is the ability to keep a straight face when someone says something like that. I don't mean that. I mean that you really are a very good stage manager. You kind of think you like to be recognized, Leo, in the 10th, but really what you want to do is you want to fucking make it right and get things organized and be in a role that stretches your capacities, where you have to be all you can be in order to be. You have to be not only all you can be, you've got to even be a little more you can be. The army can go fuck itself. They just want you to be all you can be. No, you're going to be even more than all you can be. You're going to be super dude or super chick. And your work situations must make you grow. And you're going to do it. In fact, this is a really, really wild time. All the stuff going on in Aries is going on in the house of get it done. Sixth house. Make it happen. Don't burn out. Sixth place, very easy place to burn out, especially with Aries there. In other words, sleep, rest, get a little sunshine, and make sure that there is some work-life balance is one thing. I'm just saying, like, a little bit of elemental balance, you know, that counts for food, you know, water, getting up from your chair and things like this. And it's very action-oriented. And just don't burn out. You got to know when to stop. You got to know when to chill out. And come back to it tomorrow when you're feeling better. If you're discouraged one night, just do something else. Make cupcakes. And wake up in the morning and see how you feel. But as much as you are one of these absolutely fantastic behind-the-scenes people, Leo is coming. Jupiter in Leo is coming. And so you're also going to get noticed. Everyone likes a good round of applause, but you don't like being taken out of this thing that's very central to who you are, which is a very strong sense of identification with the work that you're doing, and the work that you're doing being more important than being recognized for it. Give yourself a big pat on the back if that is true about you, because it seems like most of the world, they just want to, you know absolutely nothing, wake up one morning, declare themselves an influencer, start a YouTube channel, and have 10 million subscribers, and then suddenly they're making money on Lipitor or something like that, advertisements going up. No, you are the real thing. You've had Chiron going through this place, the sixth for 9 years. You since 2018, you know how important the what you do every day is to your healing, and to your wholeness as a human being. This is only going to increase as Saturn and Neptune move in over the next few days. From what I'm working, I'm recording today on the 24th of January, and so. If you're given some kind of a big thank you or a promotion, you know, it's probably the right thing for you. And what happens when Jupiter is very active doesn't happen very often, because it's not Jupiter runs a 12-year cycle. The last time this happened was somewhere around 12 years ago. But we're in this very special moment of Pluto, a modern ruling planet in early Aquarius, And you know, you could be, if not known, surely loved and respected for who you are and what you do, and seen as an exemplar, seen and respected as someone who sets a good example. And so make sure that is a friendly and loving and forgiving and open-hearted Jupiter in Leo, a generous example of what it means to be a successful human being. And thank everyone else. You know, even if you did 51% of the work and everyone else did 49% of the work, 51 is not a passing grade. You needed the 49% to make it happen. Make sure that you are gracious and that you thank the people who have helped you get to where you are and become who you are, because that's going to go a long way. And that's part of the example that you need to set. I mean, you know, we see this all the time. You know, people make it seem like they're, self-made millionaires. That's not true. That's not true. Everyone who ever licked a stamp for them or, typed in entries into that database for them was completely integral to their success. All right, I think that's my message. We've sure covered quite a few houses here. We've left out three and five, but I might have covered them, Capricorn and Pisces. Check that out. And if you have any questions, if you're like, what really is going on in Capricorn and Pisces, drop a note, leave a comment, and send it to cs@planetwaves.net. And I'm planning on having some kind of a Q&A for this series. Listen, thank you. And pleasure working for you. Signing off from Harshaw House, 132 on this glorious, ice-cold winter afternoon. Lots of love, and bye for now.